everybody. Welcome to the last Wednesday of Bible study until Christmas. Please restrain yourself. That is scary. When we moved into our first house in 1984 with a little two-year-old and a four-year-old boy, we were thrilled to learn that our next-door neighbors were also Christians. They went to a small church of a small denomination that taught that they were the only ones that had the truth and lived holy lives. All other churches were heretical, and all other churches dishonored God. And all other churches were filled with people that were going to hell. That would have been us. Their church had rules for holy living. No TV, no movies. Girls were not, and women were not to wear pants or shorts, only skirts and dresses. No makeup, no dancing, no alcohol, no fun. They were holy, but they sure weren't happy. And then here comes the Bolins. And our kids are about the ages of their kids, so we immediately connected. And we told them that we worked for a Christian ministry that helped people think biblically about a wide range of topics, and that we were members of a Bible church in Dallas. And it didn't take long for them to figure out that, oh, they're claiming to be Christians, but they're breaking all the rules. We had a TV. We watched movies. I lived in pants and shorts. I wore makeup. To this day, I still wear makeup as a public service, y'all. We loved listening to Chicago and Elton John and the Doobie Brothers and the Carpenters and the Eagles. And on top of it all, I was this crazy joyful Christian that had no right to be crazy joyful because I was breaking all the rules. And she didn't get it. Well, when Jan's two-year-old, when she was hitting those terrible twos, her postpartum depression caused a crisis in her life. And it was manifesting in insomnia and deep, deep exhaustion. And so she went to the doctor, and he put her on Valium. And she took that for a while, but she was really concerned that she would get addicted to Valium. And so somebody told her that exercise can often help in situations like this. And there was a women's gym in our neighborhood, and so she started going to it and started attending an aerobics class that really helped with the insomnia. The only problem was they listened to rock and roll during this aerobics class, and that was a problem for their church because, you know, that's the devil's music. And now she was caught in a quandary. And so she went and spoke to her pastor's wife, and she said, "Here's my problem. I haven't slept in 2 years. I finally am getting some relief by going to this aerobics class. But, you know, they've got rock and roll music there, and nothing but rock and roll music. And so my choices are listen to the devil's music or get addicted to drugs. What do you propose that I do?" And the pastor's wife said, "Oh, this is a no-brainer. I don't have to think about it. I certainly don't have to pray about it. Jan, you go with the drugs." And she went, "That is a problem." And she came home and came over to my house and sat at my kitchen table, and she said, "I am so confused. This is the straw that's breaking the camel's back. I don't get it." She said, "You are breaking all the rules that my church says should make you miserable, but I'm the one that's miserable, and you're the one that's happy, and that is just not right. I don't get, what should I do? I don't understand. What is happening here?" And I said, "Jan, I am so very, very sorry that you are feeling like this. I hate that you are in this kind of pain, but Jesus never meant for you to live a life of misery. He said, 'I've come that you might have life and have it abundantly.' He said, 'I've come to bring you joy that nobody can take away.'" I shared with her about grace, God's undeserved favor and goodness, that he delights to shower hugs and kisses on us because he loves us so much. And I said, "You know, although that rule-keeping isn't doing it because those aren't God's rules, and I just want to encourage you that that's not God's plan for you." So she and her husband left their church and joined ours. They got a TV. We started watching movies again. There are a few other unbiblical things that they let go of. The kids were very pleased by the change. And it reminds me that the byline for this year's Bible study is that belief affects behavior. And sometimes the way our beliefs affect our behavior means that our behavior affects other people's lives. And it can function as a window into a completely different kind of life because our behavior affects others. This chapter in 1 Corinthians 8 is divided into two sections, knowledge and love. And in the first six verses, it's about how our belief affects behavior. In order to understand the confusion that the Corinthian church faced, we need to understand what the issue was about meat. There were two sources of meat in the ancient world, the regular market, where the prices were higher, and the local temples, where you could get discounted meat because it was slated to be sacrificed to idols, pagan idols, and it was going to be offered at a discount. And then also, what functioned as restaurants in the ancient world were the pagan feasts in the pagan temples. If you wanted uncooked meat, you could go to the market. If you wanted cooked meat, you could go to basically the restaurants. But these pagan temples had these feasts that were a social thing as well as a religious thing, and there was a lot of craziness that went on at these pagan feasts. Some of the people in the church who were stronger in their faith realized that there are no true gods other than the one God that we worship. All these other pagan gods are imaginary beings. So any food that's sacrificed to imaginary beings is no big deal. And so they just thought, eat up, save money, win-win. But there were Christians who had turned from idol worship and turned from engaging in the pagan feasts. And they were working on their new life, not having anything to do with the old ways of living. And they didn't understand why their fellow believers would want to have anything to do with meat that was sacrificed to idols. And why would they eat at a pagan feast where there was all kind of crazy immorality going on and drunkenness and just this way over the top partying? Which brings us to the first two verses of 1 Corinthians 8. Now, concerning food offered to idols, we know that all of us possess knowledge. This knowledge puffs up, but love builds up. If anyone imagines that he knows something, he does not yet know as he ought to know. The problem with knowledge is that it can be used to make people feel superior to those that don't have that knowledge. There's a bigger picture that smarty pants people often don't see. The people matter more than what you know or what you think you know. The Christian life, somebody explained to me once, a long time ago, is like entering through the narrow end of a funnel. If you were an ant going through this narrow end of a funnel, in the beginning, as you would walk down the narrow end, you'd look back at where you came from and went, whoa, look how far I've come. Look how much I've learned. Look how much I've grown. But when you get out into the larger end of the funnel, if you're this little ant, the farther down you go the wall of this funnel, the farther away the opposite wall gets. And you realize, I don't know very much. The more I learn, the more I realize I have so much more to learn. It just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Spiritually knowledgeable people who are submitted to the Lord grasp that there's more that they don't know than what they do know. It's possible to take notes of sermons and file them in filing cabinets for decades and not grow spiritually one bit. One famous preacher said, some Christians grow, others just swell. The question is not how much do you know, but how well do you love? The strong believers in Corinth had knowledge, but they used it to puff up their self-esteem. They didn't use it to build up others in the church. Scripture says knowledge puffs up. It's like blowing a bubble. We love to know right. We love to be right. But But love builds up. It's like building a building. Big difference between blowing a bubble and building a building, right? How substantial of a difference is there? Having spiritual knowledge means grasping some mind-blowing truths, especially about what it means to live under grace instead of under the law, which is that list of 613 rules and regulations in the Old Testament that were in place before Jesus came. It means living with freedom to do all kinds of things under one big umbrella that gives permission. If it glorifies God, do it. We're free to do it. We'll see that spelled out in 1 Corinthians 10:31, which to me is the most important verse in the entire book of 1 Corinthians. So whether you eat or drink or whatever you do, do it all for the glory of God. I love that verse. You might not have noticed when you were doing your reading and your curriculum, your Bible study this week, but there was a very significant shift that happened when we launched into 1 Corinthians 8. In Paul's letter. Up to this point, Paul's been nailing his Corinthian friends on the non-negotiables, these direct commands that functioned like fences defining what's sin and what's not sin, black and white issues, such as, hey, you guys, stop the divisions in the church. Stop allowing sexual immorality in the church. Don't take a brother to court. If you're married, don't withhold sex from your spouse. If you're single, it's okay to get married. But if you're married, don't divorce if your spouse is willing to live with you. But now, Paul turns a corner, and he's opening things up to choices that people have, gray areas, permissibles, if you will, where different people can make different choices for different behaviors, and it's all okay depending on their relationship with God and with other people. So we've got new permissibles, things that God allows us to do as long as it glorifies him. And it falls under the two big New Testament rules, love God, love others. It's like parents who love their kids, and so they build a gigantic, fantastic jungle gym in their backyard. And they put a secure fence around the property line, and they say, have fun. The whole backyard is there for you to enjoy. The kids don't have to come and say, Mom and Dad, can I swing on the swings? Can I climb on the climbing wall? Can I go down the slide? Can I scramble up the monkey bars? Can I run around the perimeter of the yard? Can I play soccer in the open area? Yes, 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 do it all. Enjoy. It's there for you to enjoy. Be sure to be kind to your siblings while you do that. There are still fences around a great big backyard like that to provide safety and security around all the freedoms the kids have in that backyard. And that's just like what God does for us. He provides fences for us. They're like the guardrails that establish loving boundaries for us. I love the image of God's standards and his rules and his what he tells us he wants for us that function like the guardrails on a high mountain road. The guardrail isn't there to ruin your view of the beautiful vista that's laid out before you. The guardrail is there to keep you on the road and prevent you from sailing off the cliff to absolute destruction down below. For example, some of the guardrails in the New Testament are all sex is reserved for the marriage bed. Marriage is between one man and one woman for life, as we heard from Meg last week. Submit to the authorities that God has placed over you. Don't go to bed angry. And love one another, forgive one another, be patient with another, and 56 other one another's in the New Testament. Those are God's guardrails for us to keep us on the road and keep us from going off the cliff into destruction. The message of verses 1 through 6 is that, yes, we can have knowledge, but our belief affects our behavior. We can have all kinds of spiritual knowledge about our freedoms, our liberty, but it's not to be used to look down on others. In fact, the big picture of this chapter is that love trumps liberty. Paul calls his Corinthian friends to love each other well, to the point that they would be willing to sacrifice, to lay down their liberty, lay down their freedoms in Christ, if it's going to be a stumbling block for them. So the second part of this chapter, verses 7 through 13, is about love. that our behavior affects others. Paul is introducing us to the responsibilities of handling our Christian liberties rightly. Here's the bottom line. Just because we can doesn't mean we should. By the way, that's a great line for parents. You don't even have to write it down. You can remember this, or you could tattoo it. That's okay, too. Here's the key passage from this chapter. Verses 8 and 9. Food will not commend us to God. We are no worse off if we do not eat, and no better off if we do. But take care that this right of yours does not somehow become a stumbling block to the weak. This tells us that the issue really isn't about the meat. Paul redirects us from food to our motives. It's about the heart. It's always about the heart. The question Paul is challenging us with is, are you willing to lay down your rights, your liberties, in order to love your brother or sister well? Paul talks about the weak brother in verses 10 through 12. He writes, "For if anyone sees you who have knowledge eating in an idol's temple, will he not be encouraged if his conscience is weak to eat food offered to idols? And so by your knowledge, this weak person is destroyed, the brother for whom Christ died. Thus, sinning against your brothers and wounding their conscience when it is weak, you sin against Christ." The issue is, if somebody isn't clear on how to make choices that honor and glorify God, and they see you doing something that will encourage them to go back and do something that they used to do but repented of, or to go into new areas of sin that they hadn't been doing, and they're feeling pressured to do things that go against their conscience, that can mean that not only will they be confused, but it may mean that they're wounded and destroyed. The person with a weak conscience doesn't have a strong moral compass that's been shaped by the truth of the Word of God. A person with a weak conscience is way too easily influenced by other people. Her moral muscle may just give out. He may collapse into old habits, or they just may collapse into thinking disorders that are so prevalent in the whole culture. So while we may not be concerned about eating meat sacrificed to idols in 2018, we do need to be concerned about acting in ways that would cause somebody else to stumble because they're not fully convinced in their own mind of whether something is okay or not. If you're following with Join the Journey, as we're reading through Romans this year, we just came across that verse a couple days ago about it's so important to be fully convinced of what you believe in your own mind. We need to work that through. Let's spend some time talking about our permissibles, the freedoms that God gives us. There are aspects, these are aspects of the jungle gym where God says, look what I gave you. Now, if you want to, you may. But if it's going to cause somebody else to stumble and fall, don't. Because love is way more important than your freedoms. And somebody may wonder, why is this on me? Why do I have to hold back? Why shouldn't they just get over themselves and figure out it's okay and just deal with that? How come I have to be the one to change? Well, because it's always the stronger and more mature one who should help the weaker and less mature one. Whether somebody is stronger spiritually or mentally and emotionally, physically, if you want a relationship with somebody who's weaker, you have to help them. That's what we do with our kids all the time, right? We don't look down on them for not knowing as much as we do or not being as physically strong as we are. We help them because we love them. But also why we should be willing to lay down our rights and our privileges and our liberties is because we're following the example of Jesus, who set the bar for laying himself down. He willingly laid down everything so that we can have access to the Father. In Philippians 2, it says, he left everything behind in heaven when he came to earth and put himself in the same weak human position we are. So as we follow Jesus, we should also be willing to deny ourselves, take up our cross, lay down our rights, and love others so we can build them up. What does this look like in real life? Just got an email the other day from Theo, which is a homeschool organization that has classes Monday through Friday for homeschoolers. And this is what came from the director. No costumes at Theo this week. Why? Some people approve of Halloween and love it. Others don't. To respect one another, we don't celebrate Halloween at Theo. I apply 1 Corinthians 8:13 to this topic. For this reason, if food causes my brother or sister to sin, I will never eat meat again so that I may not cause one of them to sin. I just got that as I'm preparing to teach 1 Corinthians 8, and I thought that was pretty cool. And I loved her heart. For many people, it's no big deal to dress up in a costume. It's just fun. But for other people, it is a problem. So we're going to honor each other by not causing a problem. There's a pretty long list of gray areas where some believers have freedom to do things and other believers have a conviction that it's wrong for them. But today, let's just limit it to 5 permissibles, okay? First of all, we have freedom in what we eat. When we look at the Bible, pork and shellfish and catfish were specifically given the green light in the New Testament. I'm so glad, y'all. Flying Fish just opened up in South Plano last week. They serve wonderful, wonderful fish that was not available to Old Testament believers. But it is to us. In fact, all lines of demarcation between clean and unclean foods in the Old Testament were erased in the New Testament. And Jesus even instructed his disciples, when you're going out ministering and you're taking the gospel, feel free to eat whatever is placed in front of you. And when we get to chapter 10, when you come back after Christmas to Bible study, Paul is going to tell people, if you're out eating with an unbeliever and they serve you meat sacrificed to idols, don't even ask questions, just enjoy it. But we also need to make sure that our attitude about food is permeated with love. Trisha told me that Kyle is being really good about sugar right now. So love from Trisha Kegler means I'm not going to bring Krispy Kremes around my husband. I've often seen people offer sweets to diabetics. And in a moment of weakness, they rationalize, oh, one little fill in the blank won't hurt. But of course it does, because insulin and glucose spikes are real and they're dangerous. So it's not just what we eat and also, but how much. Some people spell love, F-O-O-D. And when they cook for you, they act like they're going to be hurt if you turn down second and third portions. And if somebody is working on exercising portion control and another person urges them to keep eating so that they overeat, the Bible has a word for that. It's called gluttony, eating past the point of where we should stop. So to urge someone to blow past their boundaries of self-control and cross over into gluttony is sin for the one who eats gluttonously, to make up a word, but it's also a sin for the person who pushes them. We need to love each other better than that. So the thing about food is we need to honor each other's no. Another permissible is what and how much we drink. A lot of people are not aware that the belief that good Christians don't drink is not in the Bible. It arose out of the temperance movement in the United States that resulted in prohibition from 1920 to 1933. This is not a biblical concept. Remember what Jesus' first miracle was? He turned water into Welch's grape juice. No, he did not. He turned water into the best ever wine that anybody had ever seen. And Psalm 104, which is a creation psalm, praises God for the gift of wine, saying that it gladdens the heart of man. That is true. What is also equally true is that there are millions of people whose lives have been wrecked by alcoholism. And to them, alcohol just equals evil, hurtful, bad poison. It's so incredibly painful. And that's because somebody has violated God's guardrails and gone sailing off the cliff to destruction below. The bottom line is we should never, ever, under any circumstances, abuse alcohol by getting drunk. Drunkenness is always sin. It is so destructive. But there's some freedom there. Ray and I know a Christian brother who's a seminary graduate who is also this amazing musician who spent several decades being a bass guitar player, I believe, in several rock bands. And he also has, he not only has a passion for music, he also has a passion for apologetics, which is defending the faith, and he has a passion for reaching the lost, especially those that are very intellectual. So he started something called the Bible and Beer Consortium, which sponsors debates between Christians and atheists. And according to their bylaws, it has all of their events, which happens 3 to 4 or 5 times a year in different cities, have to be held in a bar or a restaurant where beer is available. Because the very people that he's trying to reach will never come into a church, but they'll go someplace where they can get beer. And so, according to what he has set up, he has seen people come to faith from debates between Christians and atheists at The Door in Deep Ellum in Dallas, at the World of Beer in Fort Worth, at the Ginger Man in Houston, as they come and listen to open and respectful dialogue, and the Holy Spirit uses it like crazy. Last year, Ray got to debate an atheist at The Door in Deep Ellum. There was a couple there that ended up in our community group. This year, that was a wonderful way to meet them. And, you know, Ray debated this atheist, and people who would never have heard him address the topic of, is intelligent design science? We're listening to Dr. Ray Boland speak as they sipped on their Shiner box. It totally worked out great. When I think of 1 Corinthians 10:31, whether you eat or drink, do all to the glory of God, I think of Ezra Boggs in the Bible and Beer Consortium. That's the liberty to drink and to offer drink to the glory of God. On the other hand, I have a friend that won a short cruise. Cruise! I'm the cruise queen! Like, really? Right about the time that she got sober, and none of the people in her family were willing to go on a cruise without alcohol. And so she said, hey, Sue, would you go with me on this cruise, my treat? Oh, sure, I'd love to go with you on this free cruise. She goes, an alcohol-free cruise? Like, well, yeah, that's not a problem. She goes, you wouldn't have a problem with that? I certainly hope not. And so it was one of the great joys of my life to go on this 4-day cruise with my friend and to watch her experience things for the first time sober, like snorkeling. It's like, really? You've never snorkeled sober? I didn't know that anybody should ever snorkel when they've been drinking. Oh, my goodness. She goes, Sue, this is awesome. I can see the fish clearly. Yeah, no double vision or anything. I got a chance to lay down my right to have a glass of wine with dinner to love my friend well. That's what loving people with sacrifice can look like. A third permissible is money. What do we spend? What do we spend it on and how much? One of the game changers for a lot of believers is to learn we don't own a single penny. God owns it all. We're just his money managers. I've heard it said that if you show me your bank statement and your calendar, I know everything I need to know about your priorities and your idols. Ooh. That's interesting. That's one of the benefits of being in community, by the way, so we can receive loving questions like, if you're so deep in debt, why are you trading in last year's car for a brand new one? And given your house payment, how are you doing in giving to the Lord's work? We need to ask those questions of each other. Money is a big issue in this last quarter of the year as we ramp up to Christmas, right? Lots of people use plastic to buy gifts for people on their list, some of whom they don't even like, because they don't have the liquidity to buy what it is that they want to buy, so they go into debt and then spend months, hopefully, working it off. What's the heart behind that? To look better than what we actually are? In 2 Corinthians 8, Paul says that giving should be according to what we have, not according to what we don't have. A fourth permissible is screen time. What do we watch, and how much time do we spend connected to our screens, whether TV screen or computer screen or the little screen on our smartphones? This has become one of the most essential places to be aware of how our behavior affects others. especially children who can easily feel that mom's phone is more important than they are. But think about the content of the TV shows or the Netflix movies that you're watching. So easy to mindlessly consume amusement and entertainment like popcorn. Do they help you be more like Jesus? Or do they draw you more to worldly values and ways of thinking? Do the characters that you're connecting to feed your contentment? Or do they make you long for something that's other than where the Lord has you right now? What about binging, where you carve out huge chunks of time to watch an entire season of a show? And then when you talk to other people about what you watch and how much time you're spending watching it, what effect does it have on others? Does it encourage them to dive into that black hole and spend hours and hours wasting time when the stuff that needs to be done isn't getting done? Because, see, behavior affects others. That's why we need to be loving. A new variation on screen time is not just what we passively consume, but what we actively put out there on social media. Do you only post pictures that show your best self? That make you and your family look awesome and totally put together? Now, we certainly have freedom. We do have liberty to use social media to connect with other people. But does it set yourself up on a pedestal to invite comparison and make other people feel bad about themselves? What if you resolved to be authentic in what you posted about yourself? What if you used your platform to proclaim truth? Like instead of, "Aren't I fabulous?" what you were proclaiming is, "I desperately need Jesus. He is the one who's fabulous." The fifth permissible is what we wear. Whether we intend to or not, we make a statement by the clothes that we choose. If the message is, "Look at me," there's something wrong with that. We want people to see Jesus in us, not see us. Some girls are clueless about the effect of their clothing choices on other people, both men and some other women. Yes, this is Texas, where it's hot most of the year, but showing acres and acres of bare skin is a stumbling block for a lot of people. Wearing clingy fabrics that leave nothing to the imagination is a stumbling block for a number of other people. One of my beloved brothers says that he loves to see his wife wear leggings at home. She has clothes for home and clothes for out in public. The clothes she wears at home are just for him. She can show off her body as much as she wants under those circumstances. That is a great display of wisdom. If you're in doubt about whether you should wear something, I just want to ask out of kindness and love, don't. And ask for input from other people. If you're going shopping, take a picture of yourself in this art in your outfit, send it to somebody and go, "Yes, no, thumbs up, thumbs down." Ask trusted people who will tell you if you are trying to glorify the Lord or glorify yourself. The bottom line for all of these permissibles is that we need to acknowledge that we do influence others toward sin or toward godliness. If you're not aware of how you influence others, ask the Lord for help. "Lord, help me see how much my actions affect others. Take the plank out of my blind spot so I can see." Ask for help. Jesus would love to help you. We need to be willing to lay down our rights and our freedoms if it's going to make somebody else stumble. That's how love trumps liberty, because the essence of love is sacrifice. Tonight is Halloween. Some of you have already been there, done that, because it was going to be raining tonight, so it's done. But will you be handing out candy at your house tonight? Will you take your kids trick-or-treating? Some people don't want to have anything to do with the holiday that glorifies death and fear. Others think it's just a fun holiday. Dressing up is fun, and getting a ridiculous amount of candy is fun. There isn't one absolute right or wrong about Halloween. What matters is how you treat people who think differently than you do, with dignity and respect, or with contempt and ridicule. Let love trump liberty. After Halloween, we blink, and the next holiday that comes up is Thanksgiving. Some people think it's stupid to make a big deal of giving thanks on one day of the year when it ought to be a daily habit, for heaven's sake. for others. It's the awesomest thing. It's the best holiday because the whole world is, well, the American world is talking about giving thanks. And they like pumpkin pie too. What matters is how you treat people who think differently than you do, with dignity and respect or with contempt and ridicule. Let love trump liberty. And immediately after Thanksgiving, of course, comes Christmas. Will you go crazy putting bows on bows or hanging tinsel on everything that's nailed down? Or are you going to give away half your Christmas boxes because you're minimalizing and half the stuff in those Christmas boxes don't spark joy in you anymore? Will you stress out making all of your gifts because you decided you needed to do that this year? Or are you going to go to Tom Thumb, to one of the end caps where they sell gift cards, and buy one for everybody on your list and be done with it? What matters is how you treat people who feel differently than you do about it. Are you going to treat them with dignity and respect or with contempt and ridicule? Let love trump liberty.